Welcome to the Neja Chuan podcast. This is Isaac. This is episode 16. In this one, Jess and I wrap up our discussion on Wang Sheng Zai's book and the Yichuan topic. And then we finish the discussion on the standing and dissolving portion of the book. Also, there's a thing that Eric Peters wrote up on our website, nejachuanpodcast.com. You can check that out. It's an old picture that he took with a bunch of some writing that he did about spiraling energy body. I'll put a link to that in the description as well. All right. Hope you enjoy it and take care.
Welcome back to the Neja Chuan podcast with Isaac and Jess. We're talking about Wang Sheng Zai's book, The Correct Path of Yichuan, from 1929. This is a translation of an old book from the founder of Yichuan done by Paul Brennan, who's got a website with a lot of excellent translations on it. So we've been pulling some quotes here because this is the founder of the Yichuan tradition where a lot of the standing practices come from, part of which have influenced opening the energy gates. So here in chapter three, we start with applying power. So there's a few sentences here. Your shining presence is like a fast horse leaping a stream and giving a proud neigh. With a majestic bearing and full of courage, your spirit is inwardly solid. If you are facing a powerful opponent, even if it feels like you are confronted by a forest of swords and halberds, or by a mountain of sabers and axes, remain in a mentality of having no opponents at all. Your body is like a loaded crossbow, your hand like a bolt about to be released. Your hand goes out suddenly, just like a snake biting prey. When you strike someone, it will seem like the shock of a landmine. So some of these quotes speak about the standing training. He says you have a majestic bearing where you seem, you're filled with courage as you're standing there. And when it comes to sparring or fighting, it's as if you have no opponents at all. I don't know. I've heard that quote in martial arts quite a few times about how, you do your forms as if, there's an opponent there. And then when it comes time to fight, you just go after them as if there's no one there at all. Meaning you don't rely on anger or, or rage towards this person. You just do your training as you know it. And maybe standing is how you build that mentality and that ability to see an opponent as if there's no opponent there, but still, attack with majestic bearing, full of courage, as if you're, what do you think of that?
I mean, that's an, I think the whole thing of it, in terms of just like, first of all, the idea of courage is that's a whole discussion in terms of like, the idea that martial artists are supposed to be courageous and not, cowards and all this stuff. But, so I think some of that's what he's talking about, just in terms of like, it's similar to the samurai type of, just stuff. And then I think, it's about that ability to link your mind to your body so that when you decide to do something, you just do it, and there's no consideration other than the action, The one that sticks out to me. No, go ahead.
I was just going to say in Xing Yi, that type of thinking must come from Xing Yi where you don't have any consideration for the opponent. You just smash right through them. Whereas maybe other martial arts, you use borrow their power or their force and use that softness. Whereas Xing Yi, you don't really care about your opponent.
Yeah, I think it's that more sort of military mindset versus a competitive or just benevolent, I want to stop you from hurting me, but I don't want to kill you kind of attitude, which is, I think, more of the Tai Chi, you can disarm someone and, disable them without hurting them. That's the sort of highest level of it, right?
Right.
Xing Yi is more just smash them, and worry about it later, So I think the old phrase of kill them all, let God sort them out kind of fits for Xing Yi. It's like
I'm always struck by how Yichuan is such a peaceful standing martial art of awareness, and yet here's the book of the founders filled your body's like a loaded crossbow. Your hands like a bolt about to be released, like a snake biting the prey.
Yeah. So to me, the crossbow and bolt thing is the most useful piece of that little thing, because that that's an instruction in terms of how your body works. Right. That's the whole, you know, bend the bow, shoot the arrow type of thing, which is a, you know, major piece of Xing Yi. So it also happens to be the metal element. So, you know, it's the idea that he's talking already about, you know, the mind and these elemental qualities.
Right. And that's that. How would you contrast that sort of sense of a loaded crossbow? That's not quite the same as retracting and punching. It's almost like your body's preset in some retracted state that you just let go and it shoots out.
It's like a mousetrap, right? It's the spring is loaded. I mean, that's the, you know, in one sense, the whole, not the whole thing of Yi Chun, but a major part of Yi Chun is your stance is like loaded, you know, you've made everything connected. So as soon as something touches you, it just boom, it can just expand and boom, explode out from that point. That's so there is never any
of ratcheting that sometimes they'll talk about, where you're twisting and building an inner twist inside that's not that visible, and then you release when you send it out.
It's twisting, it's opening and closing, it's all of these things, but the sense is that it's not that you're squeezing it to like keep, but it's just, it's loaded. It's like a, you know, a mousetrap. It just clicks and now it's in position, and then there's a sense of a trigger of, you know, I guess that would be your mind saying do something, right? And as soon as that trigger goes, it's like the whole thing just goes into action. There doesn't, from the point where it is already, it moves forward. It doesn't have to pull back. And, you know, catapult's already loaded. All you got to do is cut the string and let it shoot off. You don't have to pull it all the way back, load it, and then, you know, launch it. So it's that thing that it's already constantly loaded, right? I mean, that's one of these weird things of Xing Yi where it's, you never let go of that sense of power, right? So, and that's the, you know,
No, I'm still here. I just turned off my camera.
Your video. Okay. The sense of everything being connected, right? Mm. So you have this, like, sort of a holographic quality where every piece is connected to every other piece. So that trigger can be activated by any part of your body. So, you know, it isn't just your hands that you're fighting with, it's everything, right? So I think part of this idea of, you know, you're like a loaded crossbow is it's like all it takes is the slightest little, you know, touch and boom, that trigger goes. And when it goes, it just smashes through whatever it encounters.
And he says it seems like the shock of a landmine. So that's just sudden explosion of the most dramatic sort.
Right. Right. And I think that's an instruction in terms of you're not trying to gently push the person or something, you know, or, you know, you want to inflict, you know, damage.
Like you were saying, there, it goes off in every direction. It's not necessarily shooting straight like an arrow. It's a landmine is just full on. I don't care what's in my way. I just explode.
Yeah, just boom, you know. And I think sometimes the metaphors they use are just because that's what was available at the time, you know.
Sure. But it's definitely meaningful, you know.
Yeah, but you know, first it was things like cannons and freight trains, and then it was, you know, like muskets and, you know, like the metaphors sort of evolve with the, you know, with technology, which I probably found kind of interesting.
Because a landmine's probably just coming into use in the 1920s. And so, you know, that's shocking. Right. You know, it has a shocking, terrifying effect.
And yeah, and that's the other thing is, yeah, if you step on a landmine, it's probably pretty Shocking.
Yeah. You don't see it coming. It just, it happens. It's already over by the time you wake up.
Right.
So, I mean, that's that Yi Chuan Xingyi mentality. How do you compare that to the standing we do in opening the energy gates where you tend to just let your arms hang at the side and it's way more relaxed and focused? It doesn't have as much of that fusing everything in an explosive way, you know?
The gun's not loaded yet.
Yeah. Right?
It's just sitting there, you know?
They're cleaning it.
I think that, to me, it's just they haven't cocked it yet, you know? It has everything there. You just haven't put that, you know, like that last little clicking into place part, which is, you know, putting your arms up in the air. Because once you're doing standing stuff where your hands are in the air, right, then you essentially have to do like, the same sort of thing as if you were hitting somebody. In terms of, you know, your arm has to have enough oomph in it to not collapse. And so that piece about just, you know, if you can hold your arm up in the air for an hour, right, you'll develop the physical strength to hit something and not have your arm collapse. And, you know, and I think that's but with the energy gates, you're really more looking at clearing out the stuff that would get in the way, right? And you haven't yet moved into, you know, doing something. That's, you know, that's more the spiraling piece about, you know, now you're going to go into an action.
Definitely. And I think those two things, you know, weave in and out of each other. So here's a little more from this chapter. In methods of seeking power, slowness is superior to speed. Leisure overcomes urgency. And it is most important of all to put forth no awkward effort. When moving, you must get the joints of your whole body to be natural without the slightest stagnation. Your bones have to be lively. Your sinews have to be extended. Your muscles have to be comfortable. Your blood has to flow like the underground channels of a well. And so there you go. I mean, those are some instructions straight out of opening the energy gates practically, you know?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's Taoist or, you know, classic Neigong stuff. I mean, it's just, that's the building blocks, right?
The slowness is superior to speed. Leisure overcomes urgency. That's that very quiet, calm, stable approach of Yi Chuan, of just standing and letting all your nerves completely become awake, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, it's that, you know, again, you know, most people don't look at something like standing as a training for martial arts, right? I mean, it's like he's kind of saying, you know, like, look, this is weird stuff, but this is the training for martial arts, and this is what you have to do while you're doing it, you know, because engaging, he doesn't say how to do any of that. Right. At least not yet. But, you know, the idea that this is OK, you know, you need to do this and do that, you know, engage this. And that's how a lot of that stuff is. It's like, you know, they'll tell you what needs to be done, but don't exactly spell it out for you.
Most of the old books are that way, where they outline principles and ideas of training and what you want to shoot for. And so, you know, if you find yourself rushing, then, you know, you're not following instructions, you know.
Right. And, you know, I mean, I think that, again, it's just that thing about take your time and take it. I mean, he's not saying take it easy, but, you know, he's implying, you know, that I think the 70% rule, or maybe in this case, an 85% rule, but that you don't push yourself, you know, beyond your limits, because then you'll break. And if you stay, you know, within this sort of comfort, you know, you can learn, you can train, you can get the, you know, the gong fu.
And all through the old internal martial arts books, you know, of all the different internal martial arts, they always say you avoid awkward effort or awkward strength. I think it's a Chinese word li, as opposed to like jin, focus power of martial arts are always trying to find, you know. So great clumsy strength isn't as good as trained strength.
Sorry.
Nice.
I think that has to do with muscle tension, essentially. You know, that what they're, you know, what he's saying is that when you do this stuff, you want to, from a physical standpoint, not be squeezing and, you know, and like tensing your body or twisting your body or doing anything that would sort of violate the rules of, you know, how you would stand, essentially. Right. So all these alignments that you do in energy gates and whatnot, they carry over into, you know, in energy gates, it carries over into cloud hands and the swings. In internal martial arts, it carries over into the forms. But the idea that, you know, the physical alignments that you have don't go away when you start to move. And I think what he's talking about here is that, you know, more importantly, the mental awareness and the connected sort of thing that you have with your body doesn't leave when you start to do something.
And so that paragraph ends with, your muscles have to be comfortable, your blood has to flow. And, you know, clenching and tightening isn't going to help that that blood flow. He's prioritizing is pretty interesting.
Well, I mean, those two things are directly connected. When you relax, your blood flow, you know, improves. And so, you know, part of what he's and blood is a big it's a big mover of things, right? So in Xingyi, one of the first sort of signs that you're getting something is that when you stand in Santi, your hands get warm, right? And, you know, like when we used to practice in Tank Hill and it was freezing cold outside, it was like your hands didn't get cold. If you were, you know, if you were moving Qi, it was fine. If you were, you know, not, you would get cold real fast. And so,
yeah, need a few jackets,
you know,
too.
It's that, well, that helps, but yeah, but you know, but it's that thing of even with a jacket, your hands will get cold if you don't have energy running out to them. You know, there's the stories of Wang Xu Jing, you know, people warming their hands on his belly and stuff like that,
right?
So, you know, I just think that that's one of those sort of real basic things you can see is like, okay, my hands and feet aren't getting cold as much, either when I'm practicing or just in general, probably means my circulation is improved, right? And one of the main ways you do that is just through this sense of letting your muscles relax.
So just to finish up, I've got a little quote here from the end of this chapter. If you rush through a boxing set like a dance, using aggressive force to speed it up and look pretty, then you'll hold your breath and your blood circulation will be greatly hindered. Whenever we see people violently hurrying through the movements, they always have angry eyes and knit eyebrows, noisily stomping, first holding their breath, then exerting their strength. Once they are finished, they are then gasping and panting, little realizing the great harm that they are doing to their vitality. So he's just ripping on the whole idea of doing exhaustive sets, like say Dom Doi and Shaolin or something with, you know, exhalations. Maybe he's talking about karate a little bit with a lot of ki-ing and so on.
Yeah, I mean, my guess is that, you know, given the times, he was probably referring more to Japanese martial arts.
Right,
and, you know,
yeah.
The ki-ai and screaming and jumping around and ki-ai kick.
So moving on to the next section of opening the energy gates, we've reached the dissolving process has reached the pelvis. So the first section there is the pelvic girdle. Then the next is the hip sockets between the head of the thigh bone and the hip socket. So there's that space in between the bone and the socket. Then he speaks of the area inside the pelvis, starting from the crease of the hip bones all the way through the inguinal crease. So this is what you call the qua.
Yeah.
And that seems like a pretty, the elusive qua, which is, you know, maybe you could say a few words about the best way to get in touch with that area. Cause that seems like a big, big part of this.
Yeah. I mean, I think this is the, linchpin of the whole thing. I mean, the entirety of this set kind of relies on your ability to feel your hips and your pelvis. And so, much like Tai Chi, you know, the first, 10 years or so, you're just, your biggest thing is getting your legs, you know, getting something to really be connected to your legs. And the pelvis is kind of the gateway to the legs, right? So, you know, the specific body parts are just specific body parts. I think the big thing with all of this stuff is awareness and sort of differential, right? Like most people, when they feel their hips, even like after doing this stuff for a while, you say, you know, point to your quad, right? And a lot of people will sort of point to the area. It's too high, basically, that they're pointing more towards their belly and like the top of their hip bone, which is part of the psoas muscle, which does connect to the quad. But the quad is actually, you know, in terms of what he's talking about here, is lower down. It's in your pelvis. It's in the sort of front of that, you know, space that he's talking about. And so it does have physical things, but essentially, you know, again, it's sort of like the armpit or, you know, the elbow, or the back of the knee, that there are these places where there isn't anything really there, you know, that you could point to and say, that's it. You know,
it feels like there's a little bit of a socket thing in there though. You can stick your thumb or your fingertip in there. And as you bend over and sort of feel a socket forming inside there.
It's a hollow, or Bruce would call it a cavity, right? So there's a joint, but in front of that joint is this space, right? So just sort of, again, to poke your armpit, it's the same sense of feeling, right? So where a lot of people get stuck is in that space, in that sort of area where your psoas muscle and, you know, all these other muscles and little big tendons and things like that are all connecting to your hip. They're really tight and they can't feel it. And it's sort of just locked up. And so, you know, the process of opening up the pelvis is really, I mean, if you look at the swings, that's really all they are, is just a pelvis opening exercise.
And the quad squat and stuff like that.
Right. I mean, you know, all of it is, it's just, you know, it's such a key piece of it. So, I think feeling it, poking around in it. I mean, you know, Bruce used to have us do tons of things where you just have, you know, lay on the floor and have somebody stick their fingers into your quad and, you know, you'll feel it eventually. Until you get a sense.
Like if you put your knees up maybe and get that socket going, then they can sort of press in there a little bit.
Right. You can feel. But the thing is, it's like it isn't pushing into the hip socket. That's kind of that's what most people would sort of do in the beginning, is they would find the joint and kind of press on that. And it isn't the joint. This is that little space net. It's like the thing is, when they push on it, it hurts like son of a bitch at first. So people don't want to push on it or even engage it when they move. And so it, you know, it's like, it's even more dead than the shoulder blades for a lot of people. You know, it's just that one of those places that's like, for a whole slew of reasons, we're just not that aware of it. So doing things like quad squats, you know, massaging it, dissolving it, all of that stuff is really key. And then, you know, once it sort of opens up and you have a little bit more sense of what's what, then it isn't as much of a challenge to start to move it in these different ways that you have to move it to do the actual movements of energy gates, right? So right now it's, you know, when you're standing, it's just about feel it, get it to transfer weight from your upper body to your lower body. And so there's a whole connection to your sacrum and your lower spine and all of this stuff that has to kind of go into that. But, you know, that's one of the big things in terms of healing lower back stuff, is how, you know, it's just sort of, once that all clicks, it's like, now you can really start dealing with the back, because the pelvis isn't, the spine, I should say, because the pelvis isn't compacting everything.
So those things all, I mean, I guess they're all interwoven. When you hit a big gate like the Kwa, it's one of those moments where you want to, you know, give it extra attention and let your mind really seek to feel that area as best you can when you're doing the standing. And then later you're going to do squats and swings and stuff that'll activate it even more.
Yeah. And I would say, you know, like you only had 10 minutes to practice, like spend 9 of them on your hips.
No doubt. Because that's going to affect your sacrum, your lower back, your thighs, your knees. You know, it's going to kick off a lot of things in both directions.
Right. I mean, and, you know, most people don't just stand still all the time. And so, you move around, you do stuff. And, you know, I think the majority of people that are probably listening to this probably do some form of, you know, Tai Chi or internal martial art or something, you know, yoga, who knows what. But that, you know, that the hips are going to be involved in some way. And so this ability to feel your hips, relax your hips, release what's inside your hips while you're standing, you know, still is going to just improve whatever type of movement thing you're doing, you know?
Right. So continuing with our chapter, we've got the genitals, then the anus and the rectum, and then finally the perineum. Located between the genitals and the anus, the perineum is the point where the energy from the legs and body joins. So that's another one of these sort of cavities. But it sort of marks the end of the up and down of your body, you know?
Right. It's the final sort of divider for, and I think, you know, without getting into a whole bunch of stuff, it really, this one is just about maintaining that little bit of space between your thighs when you stand so that things don't collapse inward. And that how you do that is by relaxing your pelvis and opening up that little bone at the base of the pelvis. I believe it's called the pubic symphysis or something like that. And when that opens up, you don't have to, for example, push your knees out to open up the space in your thighs. It just will open up from your pelvis. The same way you don't have to lift your elbows up to open up your shoulder blades if you can relax the space between your shoulder blades. So it's one of these things. It's like you can do it by pulling on other things, but that doesn't get it to relax. So, you know, for example, you can get your tailbone to drop by pushing on your knees or leaning backwards, but that doesn't help you relax. So, you know, the thing of just feeling that bottom of your sacrum opening up or your pelvis opening up, just, you know, that alone kind of blows open a whole, you know, new element of how you move when you know, when you're, or even just how you stand. It's like it just gives you more connection to your legs.
And speaking of the legs, that's the next section and sort of the final section of the dissolving standing process. So you've got the knee joint, front, back, and sides. The ankle joint, the front, the backs, and the sides. So those are those sort of multidimensional joints where you dissolve the very center of them, but you also go around the outside of them in the front and the back and the sides.
Right.
Get your mind in there and do your dissolving.
Same structure as the elbows and the shoulder, but, you know, it's the...
Then we move on to the tarsals and metatarsals, the small bones of the foot, the toes, the heel, the toes, of course, up to the tips of the toes, just like the fingers. So this is all analogous to the arms. Then the arch of the foot. And finally, the bubbling well, about one third of the distance from the base of the toes to the heel on the bottom of the foot. This gate is in the depression formed when you point your toes in the middle of the foot. So that's kind of a big one at the bottom of the feet, especially when you're doing Qingyi and Bagua, where your foot's, you know, you're pressing on that point at times. You know, I found that if you rock back and forth on your feet a little bit, you can kind of identify the bubbling well there in the front, right behind the main, you know, pad at the bottom of your front of your foot.
Yeah, I mean, there's three points on the bottom of the foot that if you sort of get a sense of your heel, the center of the arch, and the bubbling well, you know, that's a sense kind of divided into thirds. You know, your foot in general, right? It's like, that's the thing that's kind of holding everything up. So in terms of the physical alignment, this might be the most important part, right? Because everything is sitting on your feet, right? And so, you know, getting your feet to align themselves and to, you know, relax and is a really helpful piece for standing, because for most people, the thing that's the, whether or not they can feel it or not, that's another story, but the thing that's causing everything to be weird at first is just because your feet don't feel, you know, comfortable on the floor, that you shift, you wiggle, you shift forward and back, you pick up, you know, it's like you just can't find your footing. And there's something that happens, you know, when you do this dissolving thing enough, usually people will start to experience it as heat in their feet. The feet get warm, get sort of red and blotchy, you know. The next stage is you start to feel almost like a burning sensation on the very bottom of your foot. It's like the nerves on the bottom of your foot are just, you know, kind of heating up from just waking up. And then when that sort of breaks through, you get this sense of it just kind of mushing into the ground, that the flesh on your foot and the floor kind of merge. That's where the phrase mud walking comes from, right? The idea that, you know, it isn't just stepping on the ground. It's like something's going into the ground as you walk. And I think this is kind of the same thing, that there's this feeling that the boundary between you and the floor gets to be a little bit less solid. All right. Well, that seems like a good place to leave it for today.
Definitely. Good talking with you, bro.
Yeah, likewise. Hey, folks, Isaac again. Just want to let you know, if you want to check out that Wong Chung's Eye book for yourself, you can go to Paul Brennan's website, brennantranslations.com. He's got a bunch of books there that are really great. Just a shout out to him. And also, Jess put up his latest Bogwa walking thing on the Patreon. So if you're interested in that, check it out. Take care. Thanks.